questions of life. We talked first of all about humor, then we talked about rest, we talked about, what was the other one we talked about? Play. It's a test, really, you see. And this morning we're going to talk about something else. I've also kind of mentioned the fact that in Texas I work part-time for the Lutheran Church. The other part-time I do various things. One of those things is running a Texas Hill Country ranch that's been in our family for over 100 years, and it's near a little town, sort of the Texas version of Lake Wobegon, to communicate with you Minnesotans. And it's a small town, Pontotoc, Texas is its name. Some people have asked me to spell it. I will do that. I don't have a blackboard. P-O-N-T-O-T-O-C. Pontotoc. It's an Indian word which means lands of the hanging grapes. And it was named after Pontotoc, Mississippi. Some of the settlers came across there. And what Pontotoc, Mississippi was named after, I have no idea. But Pontotoc, Texas is, as I say, a small town. Give you an idea how small Pontotoc is. My address in Pontotoc is Ron. And I get mailed that way. And Pontotoc is a country town. It is so country that they still think that E.T. stands for Ernest Tubbs. That is a Texas joke there. But we have a lot of excitement in Pontotoc. You may not realize that. For example, right now in Pontotoc, in downtown Pontotoc, there's a big urban renewal project going on. They're replacing the screen door on the cafe. And we had a real lot of excitement about a week or so ago as we had a major disaster in downtown Pontotoc. It was a chemical spill. Horsefly Holloway was driving through in his pickup and hit a skunk. Well, let's scratch that one off. But in spite of all this excitement, there are some people who choose to retire from the big cities of Houston and San Antonio and Austin and Dallas and come back and live in Pontotoc, Texas. And this is exactly what happened to two old boys recently who inherited some family land, as most people do in that area. You can't buy the land. You have to inherit it. And they had never really lived on the land themselves, but it was retirement age, and they thought they would move back. And when they got back, they really didn't need the money from the land, so they said, it might just be fun if we took this land and tried to recreate the way it was when our grandfather ran this ranch, this farm, to do it the way that he did, have all the old-time antique machines and facilities. That just really might be fun. So they started looking around, trying to find things to do that, and they finally decided they needed some mules. But they didn't know where to get any mules, and they finally inquired around and found out a horse and mule trader not very far away. So they went over there and said, we want some mules. You got any mules? And he said, boy, I'm just fresh out. But I tell you what, you're in luck. I just happen to have some mule eggs. Well, these old city boys, they didn't know any better. And they said, hey, well, what would we do with a mule egg? And he said, well, you can just hatch it out, and then you can raise that mule chick. And just right from the very beginning, and just really get the feel of what it means to be a mule owner. And they said, well, that sounds like fun. Okay, sell us one of those mule eggs. Well, the old boy did, and it kind of looked surprisingly like a watermelon, but they didn't know any difference. So they put this mule egg in the back of their pickup and started home. And it was kind of a rough road, and about halfway home, they hit a bump. And the mule egg went right out of the pickup. They stopped, ran back there. Well, it had just busted all to pieces. And they were standing there looking at it, wondering what in the world had happened. A jackrabbit that had been laying up under a bush ran off. And the guy said, hey, there goes our mule chick. Catch him. Well, the other brother took off after that jackrabbit, or pardon me, that mule chick. And the faster he'd go, the faster the rabbit went. And after about a mile, the rabbit was about 2 miles ahead of him, so he stopped, starts going back to the pickup, gets back there just huffing and puffing, and the other brother said, well, did you catch that mule chick? And the other guy said, no, I didn't, but it's just as well, because I don't think you and me could plow that fast anyway. So that's the kind of lifestyle in Pontotoc, Texas. In a world of fast mule chicks, there are a lot of people who want to slow down to get out of the fast lane, and the places like Pontotoc, Texas, and Lake Wobegon, and other places sound very attractive to them. This morning, I'd like to talk a little bit about that basic need that we all have to get away from it all and slow down. And I would like to begin by reading the 55th Psalm, the first 8 verses of it, and I've been looking all over. I didn't bring my New English, and all I can find around here is New Testament of the Good News Bible, but this is the Revised, so let me share that with you. Psalm 55, "Give ear to my prayer, O God, and hide not thyself from my supplication. Attend to me and answer me. I am overcome by my trouble. I am distraught by the noise of the enemy because of the oppression of the wicked. For they bring trouble upon me, and in anger they cherish enmity against me. My heart is in anguish within me. The terrors of death have fallen upon me. Fear and trembling comes upon me, and horror overwhelms me. And I say, oh, that I had wings like a dove. I would fly away and be at rest. Yea, I would wander afar. I would lodge in the wilderness. I would haste to find me a shelter from the raging wind and tempest." If someone were to ask me what my favorite book of the Bible is, that would be very simple. It is the book of Psalms. And I think I like Psalms because no matter where I open it, I seem to find almost exactly the same feelings being expressed in these poetic pages as I am feeling at that particular time. I really identify with the psalmist on almost every occasion that I am having some sort of up or down in my life. No matter where I am, up or down, I open those psalms and I can find some thoughts and feelings that I can readily identify with. For example, this 55th Psalm, I can identify with verse 2, which translated in the Good News is why I wanted to share that with you. It is translated in the Good News, "I am worn out by my worries." I am worn out by my worries. And I really like that because that identifies and characterizes the situation that I find myself in many times, that I am worn out by my worries. As I've mentioned in some of the past sessions, I've had a lifelong struggle with stress and tension and have had all of the physical symptoms that go along with me. There have been many times when I have literally been worn out physically with, as I mentioned, tension headaches and gastrointestinal things, and I won't go into great detail on that, but except probably the darkest time in my life was about a 5-year period when I had hypoglycemia, which is low blood sugar, and if you're familiar with that at all, there are lots of bad things in this world physically, but that's one I don't ever care to go through again. It's a very depressing kind of thing. And I don't think that I'm alone. If we were to do a little survey here this morning, probably most of you could tell about the scars that you have from all of the stress and tension in your life and how it has affected you physically. So stress, it's a big deal in our lives. We've talked about that before. But the thing I think that most of us maybe are not really aware is that stress is really nothing new in this old world. Then when you stop and think about it, it has probably been around from the very beginning. I just imagine that old Eve, after she ate that forbidden fruit in the garden, had a few intestinal upsets and problems. She had a little problem digesting her food after she had eaten it. And if you look at some of the other biblical characters, they probably were in similar situations. Think of the pressure that old Noah must have felt trying to complete that ark and get all of those animals in there, especially 2 by 2, before it started raining. And I ran across a little quote by Will Rogers not long ago that I'd never heard before. He says, you know, I really don't think or believe that Noah really got all those animals on the ark. Because if he'd have tried to get 2 skunks on that ark, it has scared all the rest of the animals away. But I just imagine that old Noah had a few tense moments trying to load up that ark. And then think about the tense muscles and the sweaty palms that little David must have experienced as he walked out on that Palestinian plain to face the giant Goliath, and all he had in his hand was a little old bitty slingshot. Or how about Peter and the knot that surely appeared in his stomach on that cool Jerusalem morning when he heard that rooster crow, and realized that Jesus was right. He had denied his Lord. And what about Jesus himself? If Jesus was truly as human as we teach and believe, then he was not immune from all of the stresses and strains of the struggles in his life as well. In fact, the scene in the Garden of Gethsemane the night before his crucifixion seems to testify to that when Mark writes, "Distress and anguish came over him, and he said to his disciples, 'The sorrow in my heart is so great that it almost crushes me.'" And Luke adds to that picture of tension when he writes, "In great anguish he prayed even more fervently, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground." Now, folks, that is a picture of somebody feeling stress. So stress and tension, pressure and worry, they're nothing new. Our biblical predecessors felt them long before we did, and probably even more intensely than you and I experience those things today. And I find it very interesting that their first reaction in the face of stress is almost exactly the same as mine. They had this great burning desire to escape it. Listen to Jesus in that garden. "Father, if you will, take this cup of suffering away from me." And the psalmist in that 55th psalm cries out longingly, "I wish I had wings like a dove. I would fly away and find rest. I would fly far away and make my home in the desert. I would hurry and find myself a shelter from the raging wind and the storm." And I understand that desire to flee the terrors of tension. In fact, not only do I understand it, but quite frankly, folks, I practice it. The way I have been able to survive all of the stressful times in my life has been to practice the philosophy of Linus in the comic strip Peanuts, and that is, no problem is so great or so big that it can't be run away from. Yes, quite regularly I run away. Not permanently, but at least for a little while. Just long enough to recharge my batteries and get enough strength to return to the fray. And the place that I most often run away to is this place I've been humorously introducing you to at the beginning of these sessions, our family ranch near the little town of Pontotoc. And as I mentioned, it's a ranch that's been in our family for over 100 years, and for most of my life it has always been a place that I have been able to run away to. And in one of my sessions I mentioned the fact that over the couch in the living room we have a poster which shows an old hound dog asleep in the grass, and the caption on that poster is, "You don't have to chase rabbits all the time." And I did a whole session on that, and I won't repeat that, except to say that I think that poster is so appropriate where it is, because that ranch has been my retreat place, my runaway place, the place that I go to rest, relax, and recuperate from chasing all the rabbits of my other careers. And quite frankly, folks, if I had not had that getaway place over the years, I probably would not be here today. I just probably would not have made it physically, mentally, emotionally, or spiritually. And also, it is on this ranch that traditionally, I can't find out the exact time that our family started doing that, but close to 75 years ago, we started raising goats. Angora goats, the producers of mohair, which all of you northern people know about. It's a very fine, warm, fashionable fiber that you need to wear, because all the goat ranchers in Texas need those goats. And the goats have been a very important part of our family up until a little over a week ago, when I had to sell them because of all the predators. And so I've been enjoying getting a lot out of his class on grief, because that has been a matter of grief to me. But I'm not here to talk about the present. I'm to talk a little bit about the past with our goats, because those goats have meant a lot to me over the years. Anytime I felt that I was kind of stressed out and felt the need to stop and smell the goats, I went to the ranch, and they were very beneficial to me. All of you have probably heard at one time or another, maybe even said it yourself, don't let anybody get your goat. It's a very popular saying in our English language, in American English language at least. I don't know whether you know the source of that old saying or not. Well, you're about to find out. It comes from the world of horse racing. Now, if you know anything at all about racehorses, you know they tend to be tense, high-strung animals, and from the very beginning of that sport, trainers have been trying to find ways to calm those animals down so that they can conserve their strength and use it at the right time in the right place out on the racetrack during the race. Well, sometime, somewhere, someone somehow discovered that if you would take a goat, yes, a goat, and put it in the stall with that racehorse, it had an amazingly calming effect upon the animal. In fact, you still see that today around racetracks and rodeos. You'll see a lot of goats running around. And if you wonder why, that's why they're there, to calm the animals down. But also, we human beings, being the devious animals that we are, somebody discovered that if you would slip into your opponent's stall the night before the race and steal their goat, that would really upset the horse. They'd pace all night, use up all their energy, be an easy opponent out on the track the next day. So that is where the old phrase, don't let anybody get your goat, comes from. Now, wasn't that worth your price of admission to Holden Village this week just to learn that? You can go home and tell everybody, hey, I learned this great bit of legend and lore at Holden Village. Well, I really like that old saying, not just because of the fact that I identify very closely to goats, but also because I found that to be very true, that my goats, our family ranch, have had a great calming effect upon me over the years. They have helped me make it through the rat race of life. Now, I'm not saying that you got to go out and get a goat or a ranch or something like that, although if you want to, you can probably find a lot of cheap ones in Central Texas right now. But what I am saying is that all of us need diversions, something to take our minds off of the everyday life and the stresses and tensions that go along with it, something that will put our minds and our bodies and our souls at rest. Ford Motor Company has been using the slogan, "The best never rest." Probably all seen that or heard it. And I understand what they're saying in the context of those commercials, but I think that a better slogan for most of us nowadays would be, "The best better rest." Robert Orban has wisely observed, the problem with living life in the fast lane is you get to the toll booth faster, which ties in with Stephen Wright's conclusion, I think God is going to come down and pull civilization over for speeding. And again, this is not a new situation. It's one that even Jesus himself experienced. Remember that scene in Mark 6 where we read, there were so many people coming and going that Jesus and his disciples didn't even have time to eat. Sounds like a scene out of contemporary family life, doesn't it? So Jesus said to them, let us go off by ourselves to some place where we will be alone and you can rest a while. So they started out in a boat by themselves to a lonely place. And I think we could see from this phrase that Jesus realized the need to get away, to rest. And we also get a little hint here that Jesus himself may have had diversions. Kimberly Bobo makes the provocative suggestion, have you ever noticed in reading the gospel that Jesus was regularly found riding in boats? Now, no doubt boats were a major means of transportation in those days. However, says Bobo, I believe Christ enjoyed riding in boats. I mean, if you can sleep during a storm on a boat, you have to really like boats. So Jesus knew the importance of diversions and rest in facing the storms of life, and he didn't let anybody get his goat. So we all need those times away, those moments of diversions and those places like Holden Village, there where you can go and listen to the sacred. But what do you do when you find those places, those quiet places? Well, hopefully you will use them as quiet places and look at them as opportunities to hear the voice of God. Over the last several years, in fact, starting probably with one of my first visits to Holden Village, I became very aware of the need for these getaway places, for times of silence and solitude in my life. And so I've done quite a bit of thinking about that over the years, and would like to talk a little bit, as contradictory as it may sound, about silence. That humorous but also wise observer of life, Woody Allen, has said, "God is silent. Now if we can only get human beings to shut up." One of the reasons why we human beings have such a problem shutting up may be our basic fear of silence. Henry Nouwen has observed, for many, silence is threatening. There are some students that you probably know who can't study without a solid wall of music surrounding them. And if they are forced to sit in a room without that constant flow of sound, they grow very nervous. Thus, for many of us, silence has become a real disturbance. There was a time when silence was normal and a lot of racket disturbed us. But today, noise is the normal fare, and silence, strange as it may seem, has become the real disturbance. And the result is, says Nouwen, we have become alienated from silence. If we go to the beach or on a picnic in the woods, the transistor radio is often our most important companion. Perhaps we should say that we can't stand the sound of silence. And why can't we stand the sound of silence? Well, maybe it's as Frederick Buechner observes, we are none of us very good at silence because it says too much. There's no question but that the sounds of silence do say a lot. Some of it negative, some of it saying things we don't want to hear, things that threaten and frighten us, but there's a lot of positive in the sounds of silence. Good things, things that can give us peace and comfort and security. And one of these is the fact that God quite frequently speaks through the sounds of silence. The Bible is just full of references. That little incident that all of us are familiar with, where Elijah goes off and hides in the cave, and the Lord comes to him, not in the roaring wind, not in the grinding earthquake, not in the crackling fire, but God comes to him and speaks to him in the still, small voice. Or as the original Hebrew says, in the sound of a deep silence. And many of the major events of Jesus' life took place in solitude and silence. 40 days in the silent wilderness preparing for his public ministry, and then after his ministry begins, we just have any number of those incidents like that one we talked about in Mark 6, where he is with the crowds, the multitudes, feeding them, healing them, preaching to them, and then almost in the very next verse you will have him going away to a lonely place by himself to pray. He was a very public person, Jesus was, but he was also a very private person. And he used those moments of privacy, those moments of silence and solitude, to get strength to go back and be the public person that he was. So silence is very important in the Bible. And it's no less important today. God still frequently speaks to us in his still small voice. And sometimes the only way that we can hear him is in those sounds of silence. T.S. Eliot has these lines in his poem, Ash Wednesday. Where shall the word be found? Where will the word resound? Not here. There is not enough silence. Now, if silence is that important, then we need to see that we include it in our lives. And first of all, we need to see if we can include it in our private lives. John Barrymore, the famous actor of generations past, and if you remember who John Barrymore is, you're saying something about your age. And John Barrymore, who was an authority on a lot of things, surprisingly, was also had something to say on this particular subject. One of his more famous quotes, he said, in Genesis it says that it is not good for man to be alone. But sometimes it's a great relief. And others have expressed their need for silence and solitude too. Some quotes, Bob Steele, there's only one thing worse than being alone, and that's wishing you were alone. Ralph Waldo Emerson, there never was a child so lovely, but his mother was glad to get him asleep. Paul Tillich, whom you've heard mentioned here this week, language has created the word loneliness to express the pain of being alone, and has created the word solitude to express the glory of being alone. So, being alone, solitude, there are good sides to that. And ideally, each of us should have our closet, our regular time and place for silence and solitude in our everyday life. And for some people, that's easy. We are retired, or the kids are gone from home, and we have a regular schedule. Our home is basically quiet most of the time, and we can find those times very easily in our day. For others, however, finding such a regular time is very difficult. For one thing, it's hard to get people to respect our need for such times alone. Erica Young has said, "Solitude is un-American." And Ann Maura Lindberg reflected on this problem when she went off to her secluded cottage on the shore and wrote her classic little book, Gift from the Sea, and she said, "If one sets aside time for a business appointment, a trip to the hairdresser, a social engagement, or a shopping expedition, that time is accepted as inviolable. But if one says, 'I can't come because that's my hour to be alone,' one is considered to be rude, egotistical, or strange. What a commentary on our civilization when being alone is considered suspect, when one has to apologize for it, make excuses, hide the fact that one practices it like a secret vice." So there are social obstacles to finding times of silence and solitude. But I'm convinced that if you have the desire and the fortitude, they can be overcome. Another problem is just finding a quiet place in this old loud world that we have. Some do it by taking hikes in the woods, as many of you have, or are jogging or running back wherever you are, or going out on a boat, or any kind of activity like that which is socially acceptable to be quiet and alone. A lot of people love commuting. Why? So they can be alone, turn the radio off, put their little fake phone antenna up there, but not really have a phone. And they can be away and kind of get the strength to go be the public persons they are at the workplace. And then after the workday is over, that commuting time gives them the time to kind of make the transition back to their family life. Wherever you find these times, it can be while you're waiting. We do a lot of waiting in our life. How do you use that waiting time? Maybe you can, instead of fretting and fussing that the doctor shouldn't be keeping you waiting, you can use that time to kind of rest and reflect. Same thing, waiting in the grocery line or wherever it is, waiting in the ice cream bar or line at night. Washing dishes. For me, mowing the lawn is a great reflective time. Some of you Minnesotans have a new coach up there at the university by the name of Jim Wacker. Well, we trained Jim Wacker in Texas. He took Texas Lutheran College to two small college national championships, went off to North Dakota for a while, found out that was too cold, came back to Texas at Southwest Texas State University, where I was campus pastor at the time, stayed there 4 years, took us to two national football titles on the Division II level. If you don't know Jim Wacker, you should. He is one of the unique individuals in the world, full of energy and enthusiasm, a delightful person, a gifted football coach, and also a gifted Christian. Lutheran, by the way. But he's one of these guys that, well, I tell the story that when God went to pass out enthusiasm and he got to Jim Wacker, he stumped his toe and spilled the whole bag all over him. He's just a bundle of energy. He goes all the time. And big time football is just eats you up. And a lot of us who know and love Jim Wacker have wondered how in the world he makes it. And one time I asked him, I said, "Jim, how in the world do you keep going in all this?" You know, when he was with our team and we were going to national championships, the press was all over him all the time, and then he was practicing, and there was just apparently no free time. And he said, "Well, Ron, I'll tell you what I do." He said, "I go to the bathroom." "And I go in there, and I get behind that stall and shut that stall, and nobody bothers me." Well, if you have a world that will not let you go, still most people will respect your time in the bathroom, although some families with children Also, we just need vacations. I talked a little bit about vacations being what you take when you can no longer take what you've been taking all along. We just need, you know, to get away at weeks at Holden Village and other places, these extended times. A few years ago, I made the following entry in my personal journal. The other day, I sat for over 2 hours in the woods meditating and observing nature. I listened to the wind, the birds, the insects, the silence. I saw deer, rabbits, hawks, dancing grass, falling leaves, changing colors in the sky. I felt the warmth of the sun, the chill of shadows, the freshness of the breeze, the solidity of the earth. My mind drifted into peaceful daydreams. My body was relaxed and tension-free. There were other men around me doing the same thing. I could observe two of them on distant rocks. A couple of others came by where I was sitting, but when they saw what I was doing, they silently changed directions, not wanting to disturb me. And it was kind of a strange scene because it took place in the heart of Mucho Macho country, where the idea of daydreaming, meditating, bird watching, and the like are generally looked upon with great suspicion as something weird and wimpy. But what made all of this socially acceptable and unquestioned on this occasion was the fact that it was deer hunting season and we were all carrying guns. I am convinced that the reason many, if not most, men hunt and fish is because it is in a socially acceptable way to experience silence and solitude. You may not be able to go out and just sit, but if you've got a gun in your hand or a fishing rod in your hand, that's okay. People won't bother you. Now, I know women, some women like to hunt and fish, most don't. But I do know that you also need those times of silence and solitude. I'm not sure exactly what you have to carry in your hand to accomplish that, but whatever it is, look for it. So we all need times of silence and solitude. But once you find those places, what do? Well, a lot of people say, well, I'm going to pray. That's my time to pray. And that's fine and good, but for many of us, our idea of prayer is talking to God. We spend our prayer time mouthing a bunch of words. And I have this picture in my mind of us down here, you know, saying our prayers, and God up here, you know, very attentively listening to everything we say. And then, just as God is ready to answer our prayers, we say amen and rush off, leaving God hanging in the air, you know, all ready to answer our prayers, and we're not there to listen. I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but listening is just as important a part of prayer as speaking. Listening is just as important as speaking to God in prayer. Prayer is a dialogue. We need to hear just as much, if not more, than we speak. And the only way to hear is be quiet and listen. When our first granddaughter was, I forget exactly, 4 or 5 years old, and she'd been visiting us and was getting ready to leave, and I said, what are you going to do when you get home? She said, I'm going to go home and play church. I said, how do you play church? And she said, everybody sit down and be quiet. Everybody sit down and be quiet. I'm not sure we always do that in church, but I think that's a good definition sometimes of what we need to do in the church. And maybe the church should be our time of quiet and solitude. One thing I still envy about our Roman Catholic brothers and sisters is the fact that most of their churches are still not locked. In the heart of downtown San Antonio, in the hustle and bustle, is San Fernando Cathedral, and it's always open. It's always cool in there. It's always kind of quiet. And it's a place that I still like to find and go in there as a haven and refuge. Churches can be good places of quiet and solitude. Also, in our Lutheran liturgy, we have times in the liturgy for times of silence. How many of your congregations observe those times of silence? A sprinkling of them. Most Lutheran churches don't, as I've found out as I go around in all these different places, mainly because the pastors are afraid the congregation will think they've lost their place. And when I go out, a lot of times I do use that, and I can feel congregations sometimes getting uncomfortable. But we have those times built into our worship service. It's traditional in a lot of places that there be a time of quiet before the worship begins to kind of make that transition. I see a lot of people here as they lead worship doing that, kind of giving us a moment to focus, to listen. There's also a very proper place for us in the church and in community to go off together and have silent retreats. Strong tradition of that in our Christian heritage, to go off and to experience silence and quiet in community. And I would like really to see that come back, and we're trying to do that more and more in our organization in Texas. Guess what I'm trying to say is that all of us are under the stresses and strains in life. All of us need to remember, don't let anybody get your goat. And a very important goat to keep us calm is silence and solitude. The sounds of silence is a way that we can listen to the sacred. I could say a whole lot about this. As you can tell, this is one of my pet subjects. We have a few moments. I think I'd like to give you an opportunity. I've talked a lot, to experience a little silence and some things that you can do. This is something that is not new. Most of you know about relaxation exercises. But even if you know about them, I'm not sure that you always use them. I know I don't. So let's take a moment and do this a little bit too. For some of you, it may be new, and for some, it'll be just an opportunity to relax a little bit. What I'd like for you to do is get comfortable, and we've got all sorts of chairs here. If you put both feet on the ground and your back up against the wall, up against the back, and if you have your knitting or anything, it will wait for a moment. If you can put everything out of your hands and lap, if you don't have room, you can leave it in your lap. And just kind of put your hands in your lap open. Now let me explain a little bit why this posture is, sounds strange, but it's really a pretty good posture. One is breathing is very important to us, and if we can keep our breathing apparatus uncrumpled, and we can breathe better, and that's the whole idea of keeping your back erect. And also, we have many ways of being in prayer, and you know, folded hands is one way, but also open hands is a very traditional way of having your hands during prayer, that you're open to receive whatever. It's also a relaxed way to have your hands. Talked a little bit about breathing. Let's see if you breathe right. Take a big inhale, a big breath. Take a big breath. And then exhale. Now take one of those hands just for the moment and put it on your tummy. And inhale again. Take another big deep breath. And exhale. Now if when you inhale, your hand is going out, your tummy's going out, and when you exhale, it's going in, you are breathing properly. If you've been in band or choir, you've learned how to do that. But a lot of us don't. The whole lot, just think of your diaphragm as a big balloon or a big bottle, and you're trying to fill it up with air when you inhale. And then when you exhale, you're trying to empty it. That's the basic principle. And people who know more about body chemistry than I do will tell you that, you know, you want to bring in that good air and then get rid of that bad air. And the more you can do that, the better you will feel physically. So let's just concentrate on breathing here for a moment. You can put your hand back down in your lap, open, and also just close your eyes. And I can be trusted. I'm not sure about the people next to you, but we will assume they will be trustworthy. If you have contacts or something, don't want to close your eyes, if you will just find a spot on the wall or something and kind of stare at that. The idea is to keep from being distracted, but preferably close your eyes. And just concentrate on breathing. Inhale. Exhale. See if we can get a little rhythm to it. If you will inhale all together. One, two, three, four. Exhale, 2, 3, 4. Inhale. Exhale. Now, to help you further get relaxed, I'm going to kind of just take you through your body. And as I mentioned parts of your body, concentrate on relaxing them. Keep your eyes closed, concentrate on your breathing. But also, think of your toes. Consciously relax your toes. Relax your feet. Relax your ankles, your calves, your knees. Relax your thighs. Relax your hips, your buttocks. Relax your lower back. Your upper back. Go back down, relax your fingers. And your hands. Your forearms. Relax your biceps, upper arms. Then you come to the center of tension for most of us, the shoulders. Concentrate on relaxing them. And your neck, which also tends to get tied up sometimes. Then relax your jaw, just kind of let it kind of drop a little bit. You don't have to open your mouth, but just make sure your teeth are not grinding. Just relax your jaw. And your mouth. Relax your cheekbones. And your eyes. And your nose. Your ears. Relax your forehead and scalp. Just relax. Enjoy the peace and serenity of being relaxed. And now, listen in this relaxed state as I read a very familiar passage from Scripture. And see if you can put yourself into this scene. On that day, when evening had come, Jesus said to them, "Let us go across to the other side." And leaving the crowd, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was. And other boats were with him. And a great storm of wind arose, and the waves beat into the boat so that the boat was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care if we perish?" And he awoke and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. He said to them, "Why are you afraid? Have you no faith?" And they were filled with awe and said to one another, "Who then is this that even wind and sea obey him?" In your mind, see a lake. Picture a lake in your mind. And you're on the shore of that lake. There are other people there. There's a boat there. Visualize those people, the boat. Then you get on that boat, and with these other people who are Jesus and the disciples, you push away from the shore. And as you float across that lake, look around you in your mind and see all the sights that you see. What do you see on that boat in the midst of that lake? What do you hear? Sails flapping, water lapping against the side of the boat. What are the sounds? Listen to the sounds. What do you feel? The sun on your skin, the spray in your face. What do you feel on this boat in the middle of this lake? What do you taste? The water on your lips? What are some of the tastes? Smells. Fresh air off the water. What are the smells? And as you sail across this lake on this boat, suddenly clouds appear, as they can in this region very rapidly. The wind picks up, and suddenly you are in the middle of a storm. The wind howls, the boat rocks. Feel and experience that storm. And in the midst of the storm, one of the disciples goes to Jesus, wakes him up. He stands up and says to the storm, "Be quiet, be still." And miraculously, the storm ceases. Experience the calm after the storm. And your feelings about the stopping of the storm and about him who stopped the storm. And now think of a current storm in your life. It can be a physical storm, an emotional storm, a spiritual storm. Think of a storm in your life. And now hear Jesus speak to your storm. Be quiet. Be still. And imagine your storm obeying him. Enjoy the calm after your storm. And now at your leisure, you may come back to this place and this time, slowly opening your eyes. I should have said that if you go to sleep during this exercise, that's okay. Your body is telling you something. How many of you had done this kind of thing before? Most of you, okay? Now, how many of you were able to get into this thing? Sometimes, you know, you can really get into this and sometimes you can't. Were you really, many of you were really into this, okay? I've had some people say, I almost got seasick. It's amazing what the human mind can do. So any of you care to share how your experience on this little trip, cruise? Okay. You were asleep and didn't experience the storm. Hey, that's the way to handle a storm. Great. I share this with you, as I say, for some of you it may be a new experience. For some it may just be a reminder. I find this kind of thing very helpful in my quiet times. I don't have to do it all the time, but if I'm really uptight and I want to relax my body, remembering that little relaxation exercise that we went through is just an excellent way to do that. Insomnia, you can do that if you're having trouble sleeping. Just any time when you're in a real tight situation, that's an excellent little exercise. And it's not a Christian exercise. A lot of people use that. Then the whole visualization kind of thing, the guided meditation, which we just did, I think is an excellent way to put ourselves into a biblical situation. Most of us, when we hear of Bible studies, think of mental exercises, a theologian doing word studies and going into the real intellectual, academic aspects of what was trying to be communicated in this particular biblical story or passage. And I have nothing particularly against that, except I think that Jesus many times was speaking to people and their emotions and their feelings. He was not talking to them intellectually at all. And if we can put ourselves into the same kind of situation in which they were and experience the feelings that they were feeling and then what Jesus did to those feelings, we've done a Bible study. We have really caught the essence of what Jesus is trying to say to those people and to us. So I think what we've just done is an excellent way to do Bible study. And there are a lot of passages that you can do this. Either yourself or in a group or whatever way. So I introduce that to you as also a possibility to do this kind of thing again in your times of silence and solitude. Yes? She was saying centering on a spot on the wall or something like that. Yes, as I mentioned at the beginning, anything that will cut out the distractions around you, and that's where the old phrase navel gazing comes from, is that one of the positions of traditional meditation is kind of putting your head down and looking at your navel. Most of us have a little physical problem doing that, but again, the idea is, a candle, a lot of people will look at a candle, or many of us get transfixed in front of a fire, you know. That's why campfires are so popular in camping settings, is because we kind of get hypnotized, self-hypnosis, cutting out all the distractions of the world around us. Whatever way to do that. Music can be a good way. It doesn't have to be total silence. You can even get tapes now of nature, you know, of surf beating, birds, so forth. In fact, I even saw a videotape of a fire in a fireplace. They really sell these, honestly, I swear. You can go down and buy a fire and put it in your video and sit there in front of the video.
Yes. Well, in the few minutes that we have left, any reactions, comments on anything that we've said here today? Yes. Guided meditation tapes? You know, right offhand, I don't. The neat thing, though, is you can do your own. Most people have access to a tape recorder nowadays, and you can just sit down and do what I've just done in your own voice, or if you have some mellow neighbor to do that for you. I bet there are some around, but I quite honestly don't know of any. Does anybody know of guided meditation tapes? Scott and White Medical Center in Texas has them. Well, I bet a lot of other medical centers have those. As I say, this is not just a religious church kind of exercise. A lot of people are using this in therapy in various ways. So I'm sure there are some resources around. Other comments? I can see you. I've relaxed you so much. You don't have to take your afternoon nap. Well, for those of you, several of you have been with all four of the sessions that we've done. This is the final one that I am doing on this, as I say, lighter side of faith. And I hope you've gotten the spirit of what I'm trying to get across here, that we live in a world full of stress and tensions. None of us are immune to that. We need to find ways to deal with those. And I've tried to present some ways that have been a part of our Christian tradition that we're not always aware of. And to take those back, whatever bits and pieces of the humor, the rest, the play, the silence and solitude, whatever fits in your life, trying to provide you a number of tools to fight tension. Christianity is full of crosses. The Bible is full of the woes and lamentations of people gnashing their teeth and wailing in darkness. But the Bible is also full of people laughing and dancing and celebrating and shouting hosannas and alleluias. We are a joyful religion that is meant to deal with the woes and cares of people. Look for that side of our faith, the lighter side that lifts the burdens and the crosses. Listen to the sacred of laughter, of rest, of play, and of getaway times of quiet and solitude. Go and practice what I have preached. One last commercial for the book by Ron Burke. They're about to run out, fortunately. And also, I have 16 copies of an essay which appeared in Time magazine back in January, which I just think is great. It's called The Eloquent Sounds of Silence. And the first 16 people who, and if you're a couple, please just take one. But I'm sorry that I don't have more. As you know, Holden Village discourages the wasteful use of paper. But we do have those. Thank you very much for your presence.